URSULA@Pacifica.org. That's URSULA@Pacifica.org. This week's production came from the Pacifica National Office in New York City. We at Pacifica wish you a happy new year. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And next up on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides with your very own Uncle Robert Norse. Stay tuned.
So either you're with us, or you're with somebody else, or you're all by yourself.
Got to let go. Find peace in.
Nobody's right. Nobody's wrong. No one's got the answer. Words to the song. I go through the motion. Say it's out of my hand. Let go the fear. Learn how to dance. How can I say it's not my fight? How can I act like I know what's right? Do I'm on the front line? I'm not choosing sides. Got to let go. Find peace inside.
Most recent big time incident at Lulu Carpenter's. We're talking about,
yes,
that, right, Robert? Yes. I, it's great that you can pronounce the name of the. Is it owner, manager?
I think he's the owner, Manfred Srinath, but again, I'm not quite sure of the spelling. Or even the pronunciation may be inappropriate.
Well, I think it was a noble and justified.
Those who say that when the Swami comes to town, I'm trying merely to mock the Middle East and denude India, the people from the back. That is not true. That is not true. I'm trying to be wise. I'm trying to be understanding. Go ahead. We got to get you the right right kind of hot
accent. Actually, Manfred doesn't have an accent. He talks just like the rest of us here in downtown Southern California.
Or middle California. Central, coastal.
That's where I learned to talk the King's English, too, at Van Nuys Junior High School. My father used to call it the Van Nuys
it's
Junior
not exactly
High School.
How Manfred talks. It's what he does.
Okay, here's what happened. It was the Sunday after the last presidential election in 2004. And I had
theft.
You know, it was the Sunday after that election. And I had been at a giant, humongous party up in Ben Lomond, and some of you on the radio will remember that party. And I was there from about 3:30 until about 8:30, 5 hours, at which point the hostess asked me to leave because I had insulted too many people by that time. And that's pretty good. It took me 5 hours.
Drunken slut, you, yes.
And slut isn't the right word, but drunken certainly fit that day.
Yes.
And I did make my way back to town. And parked the car, and which I had managed to get into town with me.
Drunk driving as well.
Hey, wait a minute, never mind.
They never laid a finger on you.
Not that time. And so then I walked into Lulu Carpenter's and stood there and commandeered the attention of everybody in the place. And I said, now listen, are we going to put up with this? Isn't it time that this guy and his colleagues and cronies and minions, whatever, I said, you know, be put out of business? And I believe on that date, at that time, I also revealed the Peace Corps appendices, which I have been revealing in my broadsheets for years now.
This is in Lulu Carpenter's work you were talking about.
No, it was right inside, and the management, whoever was there present that night, nobody responded from the audience. They just, it was my audience, right, the people, the clients who were there.
Are you doing a poetry reading?
Sir, I just told you it was a rant. It was a political rant against George Bush. I was saying it's time to get rid of all of this and its appurtenances.
It is without a forum.
I made it be a forum, and I made it be my forum. And I can say everybody was listening because I was speaking loudly enough that everybody could hear.
Right.
And whoever was in charge that night called the cops, the Santa Cruz Police Department, and who should arrive but the lovely Miss Silva, who had busted me some months before for open container in a vehicle, a charge that I beat in court, but we don't need to go in that. And she came into the restaurant and said, Mr. Holt, the management would like you to leave and never come back. And I said, well, thank you, Miss Silva, for your gentle manner, and I will do that. Good night. And I walked away, and it was that cool, and I've never been back.
Well, perhaps you could come and on Friday, 3 days hence, and actually review the situation for us. And maybe we're going to be in the public sidewalk in front of
Lulu Carpenters, which is, for those who are outside, who are interested, it should be, I'm going to be playing this Thursday evening, so it should be the next day, Friday. But in case this tape is played later, this is, of course, the issue of police collusion with merchants and selective enforcement and actually making up laws that don't exist to harass poor people on the sidewalk. Now, I don't know, have you,
That's the dictionary definition of fascism, where the state colludes with commercial interests. That is the dictionary definition that you find in
you
the dictionary.
Can't be suggesting we have fascism and sanity.
Well, I'm just telling, I'm pointing out to you that that's the way the dictionary defines it, and a lot of people have that in their heads, and they define it that way, too.
I define it... dictionary should be burned, I think.
Well, I define it in a somewhat more basic way. I define it on the basis of the metaphor that's being used there. The metaphor is that bundle of rods that's used to make the handle of a ceremonial axe, and it used to appear, that is, on U.S. money, on the back of the old Liberty Head dime, there were those fascies, F-A-S-C-E-S, which is
a bundle of faggots.
Exactly, that's what it is. And the metaphor there is that there is union in strength, strength in union.
Let's not get too far from Lulu Carpenters, right?
Well, we're talking about, I take the idea of fascism to a more basic understanding, which is any kind of collusive action that involves people ganging up on lesser numbers of people or on weaker people, you know, where the strong gang up against the weak.
Have you experienced any of this in the last year in Santa Cruz, or observed it?
Well, Robert, you know, and some of the people who are listening probably know that I have had trouble with the police and I in this city, and I have spoken out against it in my broadsheets on two occasions.
Literally. You want to access your broadsheets?
Well, it helps to be a friend or an acquaintance of mine, and then you get one handed to you when you see me, and if there's one currently...
If somebody wants your broadside, is there an email address they can email you at?
There is a website they can go to and read the text of these broadsheets, but they're not formatted as broadsheets. They're formatted in the most simplistic way that is allowed when you get the cheapo deal.
But still, the content is there.
The content is there. The website. The website is, I'm translating into English now, so you get a sense of what might be going on with this website. It's called the Winged Coyote, but that's not the address. The address is Quetzalcoyote.org, and I'll spell that Quetzalcoyotl.
Whoa.
.org. Not to be confused with Quetzalcoatl, who is the winged serpent. That has a C-O-A before the T-L. And this is C-O-Y-O.
For those who missed that, if you really want to get this publication, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, and I will attempt to decipher this particular spelling and get back to you, assuming you have somebody I can get back to you on. Anything, any other instances of police misconduct recently, or maybe you have some beneficial comments about how the scene is changing in a positive way, people are standing up for their rights, or not? What's your sense?
Well, let's just talk about police a little bit. I was here on Halloween night, and I was very aware, very conscious of the increased police presence in Santa Cruz, which, of course, was necessary in order to control those massive crowds of crazy, drunken, disguised
people. I must have the bullwhips were being used are quite effective.
Some of them were carrying bullwhips as part of their costume.
Well,
although I don't remember seeing
the police officers. I mean, carrying the batons, the pepper spray, the body armor.
And don't forget the helicopter with the searchlight.
The
helicopter with the searchlight.
How long were you here for that Halloween?
I had to take the 11 o'clock bus back to Fulton because I didn't want to walk.
I went back around 10:30, so I missed the last of the climax of the Halloween celebration.
But one of the things I wanted to comment on, and this is a mystery that arose that night, and it has to do with police presence. I saw, as I went to the bus, just right before 11 o'clock, a troop of perhaps 8 or 10 uniformed police officers. It said police on the backs of their uniforms, but the identificational tag on the front merely said California Police. Now, who were those people? There were other private police agency people who were acting as police that night, too. Like First Alarm people,
Highway Patrol, CPD, and then I saw sheriffs, and I also saw, I think, some private police. I don't think I saw those folks you mentioned, although I didn't go past, very far past Borders, I don't think.
They were walking right through the open spaces of the metro station, diagonally through it,
all to the metro,
all as a group, as if they were walking toward, what would it be? down the block there somewhere, farther south than
the But did you see any instances of misconduct? Other than the presence of police itself in such numbers can be intimidating.
No, I didn't see any misconduct. I actually saw an event, a civilian event, where the police probably should have, you know, were could have been involved. There was some kind of gang activity right before I got on the bus, right in front of the Catalyst, I believe it was. I walked through right as these two groups facing off each other were in a kind of a tense moment, just ready to spring, one of them. I walked by, and just a few moments later, they did, and so I saw them go, one whole group rushed toward another group and did their dirty work.
Spanish-speaking individuals?
It looked like it. I saw the attacking group flee after a few minutes. They were in concert. I mean, they were all running together. But somebody had set off the thing and told them when to get out, too. I mean, they were very well organized. And it was about six of them, I think, right before 11 o'clock. 5 minutes or so before 11 o'clock.
This wasn't the stabbing incident we heard about later.
I really don't know, because I didn't hear more about that incident than that there was one. And it may have been right around there. Who knows what happened. But they got out real quick, and they ran southeastbound, apparently through the metro station as well, a few minutes before those cops came the other way.
Gotcha.
And then two Santa Cruz police, I think they were, or possibly they were first alarm guys. I think they might have been first alarm guys, came down the street right after those guys ran through. But they were not in hot pursuit. And they went and talked to some uniformed cops by the metro stations and said, like, did you see those guys, or whatever they said.
And that was pretty much it. It's hard to actually pursue those incidents when they come up, and I don't think that massive police presence is particularly effective. There are others disagree. Anyway, you are invited to come to the Lulu Carpenter's event, today being the 6th. It'll be the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, yes. It'll be the 10th of November, 4 and 8 in the evening down in Lulu Carpenter's. Is it the foot or is it the head of the mall?
Good question.
The post office.
We would have to call it the head.
We've been talking with.
I mean, there's a certain intellectual presumption.
Dennis Holt, I believe your name is.
I believe my name is that too. Call me Nietzsche, but don't call me Denny, okay?
No,
Robert, I'm.
And as you can hear, that was actually a couple months ago. An interview with Dennis Holt about Halloween. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is the Thursday evening edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, a twice-weekly show which goes into local politics, civil rights, interviews on the street, things of that sort, and which invites you to call in at 427-3772 if you have news updates or commentary or thoughts or announcements that concern the community, and hopefully in particular the situation between the community and authorities, whether armed or unarmed, and also between poor people and those who aren't so poor, in terms of life in Santa Cruz and the surrounding area. Again, the phone number is 427-3772. My name is Robert Norris, and you can catch these shows later in case you want to review some of the important information we put out at Huff Santa Cruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters. Huff is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group I work with. We didn't have our meeting this week, but we will next week if you're interested. It's Wednesday mornings, 9:30 in the morning in the Cafe American. That's the little cafeteria that the county employees, bailiffs, judges, sheriffs, and all the mucky-mucks, including the lowlifes, like ourselves, flock to, or maybe we're the high lives, I don't know. It's in the basement of the county building right next to the court, and it's at 701 Ocean Street. Again, 9:30 on Wednesday morning, we go to 11:30, and we plot and plan and scheme to do such things as make public spaces accessible to everyone, eliminate laws that criminalize poor people, expose corruption and brutality, both in all the police agencies, but also in the halls of the city council, halls of the board of supervisors. We try to shine a light into the Stygian darkness. So check us out. Come on down. If you don't want to come to meetings because you're not a meeting person, but you do want to be helpful, go to the website Huff Santa Cruz and take a look, and then give us a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I'll get back to you if you've got some skills you want to volunteer, ranging from web work, you want to possibly do some writing, got any graphic art skills, If your group wants to sort of associate, we're going to be at the DIY Last Night Parade, some of us Huffsters. That's the do-it-yourself parade down Pacific Avenue that isn't going to be funded with thousands and thousands of dollars of city money or downtown association monitors or anything of that sort. It's just going to happen because people decide they want to be a part of a New Year's parade, which is a great idea. And actually kind of happened spontaneously in other forms earlier before the official events began to be funded in 1995-96, the so-called first night events, which required money and little cards and little badges and so forth. So perhaps it's a blessing that the city merchants and authorities ran out of money to pull these stunts, and people have to figure out what they're going to do themselves. And that's going to be New Year's. I'll actually be having a New Year's Eve show, actually in the morning before New Year's Eve, on Sunday morning, the 31st. And I'm hopefully going to be playing some more of the tape that Thomas Levitt, on his prior show, The Wake-Up Call, which runs from 7:30 to 9:30, and I'll be taking over his show during that time slot. He's away in Southern California visiting his family. And I'm going to be replaying continuing the playing of a Voices from the Village segment. I think it's either Voices from the Village or Voices. I screw up the two different shows that originally aired on Community TV. I believe Mark Halfmoon was the host, and we had former council member and mayor Christopher Crone, former current council member and former mayor Mike Rodkin, and Sherry Connibal, I believe, was there, and there may have been somebody else. Who knows, possibly Ed Porter, I'm not sure. In any case, we had a number of folks who were being interviewed on the issue of police surveillance of last year's DIY Last Night event, where there were undercover cops who infiltrated, and I've talked about that at length, and I'll be talking about it more on Sunday, and you'll actually hear other people talk about it other than me, so you can come to your own conclusions. You can read about it, too, about what possibly may happen this year. Well, you can go online, just Google for DIY, DIY, capital DIY, Last Night, and you'll get to the DIY website. And it's what's called an unorganized event, or a disorganized, or an a-organized. I'm not sure how you want to put it. But you can do your own organizing. Bring your own group. Bring your own thoughts, feelings, costumes, animals, vehicles. I don't know, whatever you got. Trying to decide whether my vehicle should play a part in this parade. I don't know. Vehicles are, of course, frowned on, unless perhaps drawn by bicycles. We could have bicycles, people sort of pedaling their way forward, towing my car. That might be an idea. Who knows? I'm going to figure that one out on the 31st of December. And you can come on down in the evening. I think people are going to be gathering at the Saturn Cafe. I'm not sure exactly about the time, although I may be able to get a call in on that from some knowledgeable person, or actually even look it up on the internet, that amazing service that we have. I'll do that now. But while I'm doing that, let's jump back to Halloween and hear the very last of the Halloween tapes. That is I actually was on the avenue on Halloween, as you can hear from my post-Halloween description of that last interview, in which got some interesting comments from people. I was wandering around with a bowl full of candy with a spooky hand coming out of the bowl of candy, as well as a bathrobe covered with buttons and a witch's hat, kind of an eclectic costume. I wasn't too unified or coherent in my costume, but I was out there with a metal tape recorder doing some tape recording. Most of it has already been played on the air. Here's a little more, and then we'll get back to perhaps your calls, 427-3772, if you want to call in. You want to call me off air because you have something that's too hot for the on air or too cold, as the case may be, the phone number to call, as mentioned before, is 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And if you want to call Free Radio and leave us a message, at us being the collective, the number there is 427-4523, 427-4523. We take public service announcements, donations, questions. If you want to become a member of the collective, you go to the website, freakradio.org, where we're also streaming. And you can get an application form, download it, and, hey, who knows, probably get a show. We're always interested in folks applying for shows. Very few people are turned away. And unless you choose to get into a factional fight, then you have to be a member of the Free Radio Collective for a period of years, and then you can really get into an angry confrontation with other members and possibly get thrown out. Pretty exciting stuff. Or maybe resign and walk away, or who knows? There's all kinds of things that can happen. But in any case, check out 427-4523 for, if you want more information about Free Radio, go to the website, freakradio.org, and call me during the next hour and a half if you have some thoughts and some updates you want to give me, because, hey, I get tired of just listening to myself talk. Actually, I never do, but I imagine other people do. So 427-3772 is the on-air number.
Nomad. And what exactly are you doing here tonight? Exercising my right to freely assemble and dressing up and having a good time. Sorry, sir, that Insurrection Act of October 17, 2006 has severely limited your right to assemble, as well as your right to live habeas corpus, to be free from cruel and unnatural punishment, and to right to be detained without trial. So you'll come with me, sir.
I actually realize that, and that's why I'm down here.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, why are you wearing that foolish Islamic mask? Don't you realize you could be mistaken for a terrorist? You and your jihadist friend here?
Yeah, that's
how we're here, the terrorists in our government behind the White House. And
sedition in the streets. Didn't you hear our president talking yesterday? The Democrats want us to lose in Iraq. We want victory. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah.
We actually want to surrender, yeah, so I guess, you know.
So how does the crowd look to you tonight?
It's bigger than I expected with the terror media campaign that the city put out.
They can't afford budgets for homeless people to go to and from the shelters. They can't afford their buses, but yet they can spend $30,000 on police officers and thousands upon thousands of more dollars on Comedy Central, TV, and all these other places. It's not clearly for...
The helicopters flying overhead with floodlights. That's pretty interesting.
An hour for the helicopters. You know, it's geared towards you and me and the average person living here and homeowners. It's not geared towards gang members. Like they said, the isolated violence last year was really from that. I don't buy it. We were here last year for 5 hours, and I didn't see a single violent thing.
Do you see more police presence here than last year?
Actually, surprisingly, I don't see as many as I expected. They made it sound out like it was going to be like this huge army of police, and we just came down here recently, so we haven't been down here for too long, but I didn't see as many as I expected.
I have seen one arrest, and the highway patrol pushed us back, and it was obviously non-violent, non-drunk guy. I wasn't sure what they were arresting him for. I think he declined to identify himself as something rather trivial, but then I couldn't get close because I was backed off. So
I was surprised to see the helicopters with floodlights because there's no excuse for that. You know, even if you have an army of cops, you can probably get away with saying, oh, they're just on hand in case something happens. But helicopters with floodlights, there's no excuse for it. There's no search for anybody going on. It's just nothing but intimidation.
I understand the residents at Pacific and Cathcart is requiring residents to come to the door with photo IDs and escort their guests into the building.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
I think that some of the problems from last year was because they had these ridiculous fences up in the middle, and it made people bump into each other and maybe made certain people not want to rub shoulders with other people. So I think they kind of instigated some of the, if there was violence, I think, you know, they instigated a lot of it with those ridiculous fences.
Was that for Halloween, or was that, that wasn't just New Year's? That's Halloween. I think you're right.
Halloween.
Because I wasn't here for New Year's.
We were down here for five hours. We didn't even see so much of the pushing match, and all the sentences to write about, and all the newsletters to write about was all about all the violence. Yeah, there were 7 stabbings, but everybody that knows about it all agrees that it was an isolated one 10-minute incident.
Well, we do have a war on terror, sir. You got to keep that in mind.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, everybody.
Participating in the terror, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush.
Oh, for heaven.
You're attacking everybody.
You're attacking our Fuhrer.
I'm sorry?
I said you're attacking our Fuhrer.
Yes, I know. Lord Bush.
Well, as I move to retire from the scene about 10:10, there are definitely more people with more costumes. Some of the young people are a little louder, but still looks pretty good. So, are you Abe in short?
I am.
How's
How's it going?
It's feeling a little bit chilly.
I assume you can fool some of the people all the time and all the people some of the time.
All I know is about reuniting the country and its slavery. Other than that,
gee, I wouldn't have known it, but thank you.
Keep up focus.
All right.
Sidewalks are definitely getting more clogged. You see police officers stopping a youth here. It looks like three of them are surrounding a guy, a young kid, here in front of Chianti's, about 11:15, a little before. We're talking sheriff's deputies. And it's not clear what's happening, but keep in mind. Some guy handed me this beer again, or this fucking bottle, and I'm getting a citation. So we have some sheriffs here, four of them actually, on the sidewalk in front of Chianti, giving a citation to this fellow. I hope that isn't an open container there, deputy. Coffee, perhaps. He's drinking a cup. And we do have a video camera person off to the side taking some photos. And the crowds are moving swiftly back and forth. Looks like we're waiting here for, not sure whether it's a warrant check or a backup. A big generator and a big light about, right in the middle of the street next to me. Folks are coming back and forth, walking by. And I will keep an eye on what's going on. What's your name?
Jacob.
And are you, did you have an open container or not?
No.
Okay. He denies having an open container. Anything you want to say for free radio?
Yeah, these cups fucking blow because I didn't even drink any of it. I was just holding it.
Thank you. Didn't quite hear all that, but I guess you out there in the radio audience did. So the individual has been let go, and the couple at the next table. Hey, what you doing there? I shake hands with you, but my hand is here. Sheriff didn't give a citation in that case. How are you doing there, Deputy Mayor Robert?
Good.
Excuse me. Thank you, sir. So we have a holy man here on the corner. Your name, sir?
My name is Father Bill.
And Father Bill, just what kind of religion are you preaching here?
I'm preaching the religion of no religion.
And in fact, you have a crucifix. You're all in black. You're wearing what appears to be Roman Catholic garb. And you have a red scarf around your neck.
That is true.
And plus some spectacles on. Are those for show, or do you in fact need glasses?
I do in fact need them.
All right, then. We'll accept that. And then you have some floozy with you. What is your name, madam?
Floozy?
Who is she? Well, she have ID on her. We are in yellow alert.
She can speak for herself.
Yeah, what is your name, ma'am?
Tabitha.
And Tabitha, what are you doing hanging out with this non-religious religious man?
I'm trying to non-convert him.
I see. Now, do you attend to any kind of capers later tonight that I would want to put on film, or...
I think those are put in a private vault.
I see. So we're not going to do that in public.
Right, exactly.
It is Halloween, though.
It is Halloween.
You know, a fertility's time, a time of pumpkins and spirits and
things. Sure.
Never been quite clear what it's all about, but nonetheless. Any comments for free radio on the non-religion that they should choose?
Then you know, this is the beauty of this country. You get the freedom of choice. Choose your own religion. Choose wisely.
You be the judge.
Yeah.
And again, we've been talking with
Father Bill.
And
Tabitha.
Thank you.
Well, I'm here in front of 1010 Pacific, and it looks like a lot of new costume folks are joining the crowd. There's a man who's literally covered with money. What are you, sir?
I am Mr. Green of Clue.
Thank you. So he is in fact, and there's the lounge, the kitchen, the entire Clue board. Who are you, madam?
Marine Smith.
And you?
I'm an evil housewife.
The evil housewife Anne Marie. Okay, well, I'm not going to comment on that at this time. Any comments for free radio?
you have any cake with you, Marie?
Yeah.
You ate all the cake. All right, I'm not going to... I'll simply back off here. Thank you very much.
And that was a somewhat weak conclusion of the Halloween festivities. Interesting, the clumps of police officers that showed up on Halloween that I suppose in the minds of the police and the sheriffs, who knows, maybe the city council, had some justification because of the threat, although there was no threat per se, just there were stabbings in the previous Halloween, the idea that great numbers of, you know, clumps of cops could stop stabbings, I don't think really has a lot of merit to it. Rather, just more intimidate people. I noticed that same procedure being used in non-Halloween events. For example, 3 or 4 days ago, down on Pacific Avenue, there were 4 hefty, muscular guys with parole stenciled on their back of their blue uniforms, sort of walking around, a gang of 4. And... It looked to me like sort of a, I've got to use the word goon squad, you know. I mean, I didn't like it when Officer Brandt was walking up and down the mall with his German Shepherd police dog. I don't like it when in ordinary times 4 police officers are running around in a clump questioning people. It seems to me to smack of police state tactics. It I think strikes fear into the hearts of lots of people who aren't criminals at all. I think it's wrong, and I think it's a sort of a sign of our times. Too much money for the police department, too much paranoia being pumped out by the politicians to increase their own political power, and then, of course, it has the evil, perhaps unintended consequence, as nice phrase that Mayor Smiley Riley, our new mayor, liked to use when she talked about her new downtown homeless go-away ordinances, unintended consequences. So I've seen more of this use of groups of police officers in ordinary circumstances downtown, which just is, to me, it's unacceptable, it's intimidating, it's a waste of money, and it's a bad sign for the future. But what do you think? Give me a call. 427-3772 is the phone number to call in. And... I think I have, what have I got here? Well, could this be a musical break coming up?
Well, it's about 8:30 on Pacific Avenue here on August 17th. The dusk is deepening at Pacific and Cathcart. Man with a harmonica, another man with a guitar. What's your name, guitar man?
I'm Jeremiah.
And you, sir, Mr. Harmonica Man?
Rock and Roll Steve.
And how's the tunes treating you, Steve?
It ain't no crime to play tunes on the street. It ain't no crime to play my tune on the street. Ain't hurt nobody, don't give a fuck. Not even if your name is Chuck. It ain't no crime playing music on the street.
Notes to add to this analysis?
I'm not even sure what he's playing here, but he's playing his own little jam. I'm just sitting here.
Smoking, and but not token.
Not yet, anyways.
Any hassles from the police or interesting sights today?
I know. Recently, I've been just trying to get my beer on and just trying to get before I start to play, and they've been hassling me. They didn't hassle me today and yesterday and the day before, but about 2 days ago, I got 2 tickets for open containers.
Open whiskey container?
No, beer.
And who is
it? Just a beer.
Is it the same officer? Or?
No, one was a ranger, and then the other one was the 3 local PDs of Pam.
Pam Bechtel.
Klein and Hoppy.
Officer Klein and Officer Hoppy. And it was here in this same location at Cathcart and Pacific?
No. Over there on the levee. We were hiding because they told us to hide our beer if we're going to take our beer breaks. So we hide our beer breaks, and they started popping us on our beer breaks. It's like, Where do you want us to hide?
How long have you been playing music in Santa Cruz?
Off and on for 9 months.
And how many tickets have you gotten for your trouble?
Oh, I have lost count.
Really? A dozen? 10, 5, 2, 20?
Under 10, probably. Maybe a little bit more. I know I've gotten a lot of open containers, a couple camping, and mostly I had one paraphernalia charge. Other than that, it's mostly just open container charges.
Now, what do you do with these charges? Have you gone to court? Or?
I haven't gone to court yet. They just cited and released me for a warrant that I hadn't paid yet for an open container, and they just said that September 11th would be my trial date.
Now, there you are, terrorist dog. Now, what kind of a warrant, what kind of a payment are they demanding from you?
Just money. It's a $190 fine, and I don't know. I just don't really feel that it's really necessary for them to charge me for a fine of drinking booze when I'm an illegal age adult. Homeless musician, all I need, you know what I mean? All I was trying to do was get my drink on before I played. For them to charge me $190 for me to sit down and play, well, shit, I think they should pay me to sit down and play.
Santa Cruz is an expensive town, my boy.
Oh, very.
Now, for example, there's a cost for leaning against a lamppost like we're doing now is itself, actually, it's not criminal, but think
it's
of the
citation.
Yeah, well, it's not even a citation, but Pam Bechtel might tell you not to lean against a lamppost. After all, you might injure the poor architecture.
Yeah.
Now, actually, I don't think she would say that, but she has said numerous things recently. Anything else you've seen in town that's interesting? You say paraphernalia? What kind of paraphernalia are we talking
about? Pot pipe. Just a weed pipe.
Did they confiscate the pipe?
They confiscated my pipe, which was a beautiful pipe, which didn't belong to me. It belonged to this beautiful woman I knew.
And did they search you?
They searched me, but they didn't find nothing on me because I'd smoked all the pot before they had...
What basis did they... Did you consent to the search?
No, we were all sitting around drinking, and as I stood up, my pot pipe had fell out of my pocket.
Clumsy oaf.
Yeah, clumsy oaf.
Well, broke. Well, we've been talking to that notorious pot and open container felon...
Jeremiah Westfall.
Thank you, Jeremiah.
See you later, brother.
All right.
And those were a few cuts from back in, August? Or was it November? I get a little confused, but it's we've been kind of jumping between August and November. I guess it was August 17th, actually. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Again, the call-in number is 427-3772. Most recently, well, somewhat recently, actually it was last week, on Friday, bunch of us Huffsters, along with the Human Rights Organization and Humanity for the Homeless, another group which normally serves on Monday, but on Christmas Day didn't serve because Christmas Day gets a big meal down at the Vets Hall. We all did a kind of a feeding and get-together and petition signing at the city attorney's office and then moved to the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is the lair of council member Ryan Coonerty is also vice mayor. Vice Mayor Coonerty has declared that Santa Cruz is a very humane city, which does a great deal for its homeless, for a city its size, and that the sleeping ban law that criminalizes sleeping after 11 o'clock at night every night is constitutional in spite of a court decision in Los Angeles by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, a federal court which covers 9 states and whose decision is precedent and binding until overturned by a higher court. It's ruled that the Skid Row sleepers cannot be arrested, although apparently Coonerty thinks the Santa Cruz sleepers can be arrested. But what's happened there is that the Skid Row, the LAPD, have stopped arresting people on Skid Row for sleeping. Admittedly, they're trying to use other tactics and other kinds of harassment devices to destroy the admittedly squalid and miserable living conditions people have down there, but since folks have no alternative, it's even more grim and gross and vicious for the police to be doing what they're doing, just as it is up here in Santa Cruz, where Ranger John Wallace's eager ticket book is actually in constant motion, apparently, giving out apparently 4 or 5 times, well, he gives out as many tickets as the entire Santa Cruz Police Department does. So the man is takes a serious interest in giving out sleeping tickets to people who have no legal place to go. I don't know if you want to call that an ethical problem or a pathological spectacle, whatever you'd call it, there it is. And that's what people face from Ranger Wallace, who got some award from the city council last year. Actually, this year, a few months, I think it was last month, might even been early this month. I wanted to stand up and make a dissenting statement, but Mayor, I think it was at the time, well, if it was this month, it would have been Mayor Riley, but it was last month, it probably was Mayor Matthews. They just changed mayors at the Santa Cruz City Council. I wanted to stand up and state, you know, I'd like to say something for public comment, that a lot of people don't appreciate the kind of abusive behavior we've seen from Ranger Wallace. And backed up by the city council, it amounts to an official endorsement of human rights violations and also kind of a form of torture, if you believe in sleep deprivation as a form of torture, which is what apparently, well, I mean, if Bush doesn't think so, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised if Mayor Riley doesn't think so, although she did think so 5 months before she ran for city council. She actually fasted against the sleeping ban and the Silva fasting demonstrations of 2000, but that was when she was not in office, you know, and not the mayor and that sort of thing. So she's learned better since. Anyway, here's some more tape from that demonstration that began, as I said, outside the city attorney's office, moved to Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz, and essentially involved getting people to sign a petition. There were some singers present who you'll hear. People were interviewed. And we began urging people to question the Bookshop Santa Cruz authorities as to whether their money would be supporting a business that supports a law that criminalizes sleep for poor people when there's no legal place for them to sleep, that says you're going to get a $90 ticket if you go to sleep. In essence, it says get out of town, hide out or get out, in essence. And here's some of that tape.
And you have this Brandy woman with you.
Yeah.
Just what is it all about? Let me ask Brandy what's going on. Brandy, why are you joining the riffraff of SAFE to disturb the peace of the shoppers here?
Well, for the first time in my life, I'm 42. I never thought that I'd actually be part of the homeless. I am. I've become to greatly appreciate and have a different total respect for people that are on the streets. It's not easy. And we do band up, and we do take care of each other, and it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, think about it. Put yourself in our shoes. If you were on the street for one night, would you rather be out in the middle of nowhere with no cover? Would you want to be able to sleep in a doorway of a business that is not open during those hours when we're sleeping? It's
that might alarm the business owner. Now, come on, Brandy, show some respect here.
Yes, but there are people that do not. There are people that ruin it for us. There are people that can't take the time to go find a bush to pee or take the time to go defecate somewhere. There's people like me. I've got an 8-year-old son. I'm not with him right now, and I'm away from my child because I don't want to drag him around like this, but I will find a bush. It's not going to harm your business or anything if I sleep in your doorway because of the fact that I have respect. It's the people that don't respect that ruin us.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you.
Officers approaching. I'm just perhaps on a patrol by. You find your cup. Hot soup, officers. Come on by. We like to feed the local police. Officers warning an individual that they can't sit on the eave of a window. Come on. Chow down. Now it's time to get somebody. It's Christmas, for heaven's sakes.
Thank you.
Anyway,
Hot soup here and some cold enforcement for the poor. The vice mayor is in this bookshop. It is the vice mayor's law that makes it illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz. These officers will arrest you if you sleep in Santa Cruz. I'm sure they'll be happy to do that. Write you a citation, perhaps. Come on now.
I talked to him too long and kiss ass to get nervous to leave.
That was Randy in a conversation with him.
We're talking with?
My name's Bill.
And Bill, you've been listening to our, as you put it, our hyperbole?
There was a bit of hyperbole, yes.
And because you feel that we're exaggerating, you've been sleeping outside.
That's not what you said. You said...
Well, I'm talking about sleeping outside.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's about the homeless.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. But that's not what you said.
Oh, okay.
That it's a crime.
Good point. I'm glad you bring that up because I thought,
Santa Cruz,
based on my bathrobe...
That is hyperbole. Well, your bathroom's kind of...
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, Bill, that's what I'm talking about. This petition is about the homeless and the right to sleep somewhere legally.
Well, let's show me... I'll cut you a deal.
All right.
If you can afford a piece of paper to let me read about it, then I'll come back.
All right, we'll allow you, but we may have to arrest you later if you fall asleep outside, all right?
There's a possibility of that.
All right, then. You are on the streets, and you are also proud and lesbian.
Yes, sir, I am. I'm very proud of who I am. I've come a long way. I'm 42 years old. I came out when I was 13, and I've been divorced from my ex-wife for 3 years. We went to the cryogenic bank in Los Angeles and bought anonymous sperm. We each were artificially inseminated and had a beautiful family. The boys looked like each other, and they also at the same time looked like us. I was the first person in my wife's family to provide them with a grandchild, which got me kudos and, you know, upper echelon points.
Your parents were not upset at your lesbian status?
No, in fact, my parents encouraged me. I had been in kindergarten with these kids, and we were now 13 years old. I had grown up with these kids, and my parents encouraged me to go to school and talk to them and come out to them, and I did so at an assembly. I sang a song. It was a scheduled program, and afterwards, I talked to my friends on the speaker, and in turn had 43 children come up on stage and group hug me, saying that it was okay.
What's the situation for lesbian women who are homeless? Have you had any contact with other folks of same-sex preference? Who do they face discrimination in an unusual way? Is there a lot of homophobia? It's been my feeling that there is among men who are gay who are out on the streets, but what's your sense?
I have a wide view into that. Yes, there is a huge discrimination and fear. And more so, yes, I'd say 63% is pointed towards the gay men in this community because of the naivete of the rest of the community that won't do the research to show themselves, make themselves feel better that it's okay. You don't have to be afraid. You know, if you're not having sex with these people, if you're not doing things open source, sharing needles, sharing razors to shave your whatever.
This will also be more difficult for people with AIDS, whether gay or not, whether lesbian or not, who are outside because of the, you know, obviously more severe condition.
It's even more so, but... You know, there's this huge, vast majority of people that are homeless here. In the center of the homeless factor in Santa Cruz, that we got each other's backs. It's pretty cool. I mean, if you got to be out here and you have to be on the streets and not know where you're sleeping from day to day or eating, you have friends. And I tell you what, they come through. There's days where I won't have anything, and you know, next thing I know, I've got $8 and I'm eating a meal somewhere.
Are you sleeping out tonight?
Yes, sir.
You can call me Your Majesty if you'd like.
Or
Your Honor, or possibly Oh Great One would be good. Oh Great and Wise One. Mr. Phallus.
Oh Great One I like.
Yes, Great White Master, how's that?
No.
No.
The Oh Great One is...
That's about as far as we go here. So you're sleeping out there. Are you going to be sleeping on public property outside, like in a tent? Or?
No tent, unfortunately.
Alone or with company?
I'm not trying to hit on you again, having realized my error.
You follow me, I'll kick your ass. It's okay.
There you go, see? You know how to defend yourself.
I got to defend myself. I had pepper spray, a knife, and a switchblade. You got to have that.
Over here.
You got to have it out here. And it's not that it's not me. It's not in my persona to think of the violence and harming someone, but I have to be able to protect myself. I fell asleep one night under a bush at Nary Lagoon. Forgot to put my leg through the backpack strap. I woke up with mud on my face, sleeping under a bush, and somebody had stolen my backpack. It can't get any worse than that.
How long have you been outside?
It's been nine and a half months.
Have you been alone, pretty much alone outside or with company?
Alone.
Alone.
It's scary, yeah. I would like to be able to camp with friends, but, you know, in numbers arises suspicion with the police. You have to think about that. If there's too many of you, your group's too big, and you're all trying to find a place to sleep, the cops see you walking down the street, it automatically arouses suspicion. You can be harassed. It's not worth it. You can be taken in for nothing, and that will still be on your record. For just trying to find a place to sleep in Santa Cruz, you can be in trouble.
Brandy, thank you for the update. Anything you want to conclude with?
Just that, you know, we have, like, the drives that go on every year, the food drives and Share Your Christmas and whatnot. When you see somebody, and, you know, the community steps up for that, and there's almost, you know, $300,000 given between food and cash and clothing aid. When you're downtown, that goes all year long. We're not only homeless for the holidays, we're homeless all the time. Bring your old clothes down in a bag and give them to somebody. They'll distribute them for you. Drop off any cash that you would like to. All of us are not alcoholics and drug addicts. A lot of us like to be able to go buy food. Now, all the money that is given down here on the streets does not go to alcohol and drugs.
Well, as long as you don't sleep at night, we're happy with you.
Thanks.
Talking with. What's your name?
I'm Glee.
And Glee, you're having a cup of soup.
Yeah, it's very delicious.
It's pretty good, and it's vegan.
Pretty good. Very good.
So, what do you think of this petition to stop the sleeping ban?
It couldn't be stopped anyway because we cannot stop the poor people. We cannot stop. It's not their choice.
Should we arrest them for sleeping at night?
No.
Right. That's what we're trying to make stop the arrest.
Yeah, I don't like that word harassing for sleeping at night. Why not the government give shelter for the homeless? Why?
Or at least let them shelter themselves.
So I would like to suggest that the government of Santa Cruz will give a very nice shelter for the homeless.
Well, right now they're sheltering 160 of the 1,500 to 2,000, so they got 5% shelter, so shouldn't we be happy?
No.
The rest of them get...
100%.
The rest of them face the threat of a sleeping 100%. Ticket.
I'm interviewed. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Anything you want to add?
I would like to add, I think this is a suggestion. I'm not rich. I'm poor. But I would like to suggest the government that the homeless here in Santa Cruz should be sheltered, a very nice shelter, not only just to cover their heads or their body, but a very nice, it is not a shelter or it is what we call a house, a real house.
Housing. And your name is?
My name is Glee Perkins.
Thank you, Glee. With a man on crutches who is 56 years old. Your name's
Chad Seip.
And you say that you have had some difficulty finding lodging?
Yes, every night. I've been out here homeless. I've got blown kneecap and on crutches, and city just says it's not their problem. They don't care about us. You know, we're just excess baggage to them.
Well, what about the Interface Satellite Shelter Program? That fine emergency shelter program you can go to at 4 o'clock and line up for.
That's a laugh. If you ain't there at 2 o'clock, they tell you don't even bother because they won't even feed you, let alone get you in, because they can put up like 100 people a night at the Armory with a blanket on a cold concrete floor. I personally feel safer out here in the streets. At least I know who's coming at me and how. You know, and you know, it's a no-win situation, you know, and like our city government just don't care. You know, they said we don't exist, you know, and yet we're very much people, you know, we're not asking a lot, just a decent night's rest, you know, without being hassled from the city cops and sheriffs and all that. And have our rights back. You know, if we're wrong on that, we're wrong. But I don't feel we are. You know, so if you can help, come out and support us, we sure appreciate it. I know that.
Been talking with
Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you.
And those were a few of the interviews in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz on December 22nd, about a week ago, last Friday. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. It's around 7 o'clock in the evening on December 28th. Looking at a couple of newspapers here, I see in one newspaper the headline, Homeless Deaths Spike in Past Year. It says rise due in part to 4 homicides, but it's also a much larger number this year than it was in the past few years. According to the paper, since the annual count began, an average of 32 people have died each year, according to the Sentinel, and according to which quotes figures released by the Santa Cruz County Homeless Persons Health Project. Last year, there were 29 deaths. There were no homeless homicides in either 2004 or 2005, and there were 4 this year. County figures show chronic liver disease and other drug and alcohol-related ailments were the leading causes of death. In 2006, the average age at death was 49. The average person is getting so numb to this, Homeless Service Center Executive Director Ken Cole said, people are getting to accept that this is just part of our society. It should be something that shocks people. Larry Turnell was 53 when he died in November from a medical condition related to his substance abuse problems. His mother, Lewis Alford, clutched a picture of her son as a young boy as she sobbed her way through the ceremony Thursday, a week ago, at the Homeless Services Center on Coral Street. This memorial, an annual event since 1999, is held December 21st, longest day of the year. About 50 people endured a dank and dreary afternoon to honor the dead on National Homeless Day. And I actually recorded that whole thing, and I'm having trouble finding the tape, but I may yet find it and play it. It's not particularly enlightening. I was rather angry. I get angry at those ceremonies because they seem to be this traditional grieving deal in which the organization that puts it together, Homeless Service Center, and which does provide, you know, some services for some homeless people, lockers and showers and meals for most anybody who wants them, although I think lockers are limited. But emergency shelter is provided for very few, relatively few, and protection from the criminalization of the poor, I should say, making them criminals if they fall asleep at night or attempt to camp together safely. You heard Brandy, the lesbian homeless activist, talk about this earlier. Ken Cole doesn't lift a finger in that direction, and the way he describes it, it's not his job to do that. His job is to get money from the city and from grants for shelter for the few rather than rights for the many. He doesn't say that, but that's how I interpret what he does. There actually is a list of names of the homeless dead, which Ken gave me. He actually gave me his master copy. I'm going to read them now, and I'm going to return to this at some point when hopefully I find the tape that covers those interviews. Rodney Dunlap Andres, 49, Nicholas Arellano, 50, Bridget Ann Bradley, 25, Ramon Serras, 50, I'm going to be mispronouncing some of these names, Kathy Clark, 47, David Anthony Collins, 50, Lynn DeLong, 56, David DeLong, 64, Norman Eldridge, 52, Timothy Erickson, 61, Burl Feliciano, 54, Lilith Franco, 25, Peter Galera, 60, Arthur Grady, 71, Kenneth Hall, 54, Peggy Hall, 49, Michael Hamm, 29, Epsy Davis Hannon, 39, N.C. Cervantes Hay, 40, James Hennigan, 71, Vicki Hetmer, 35, Patricia Howard, 60, John Jacobson, 35, Alphonse Johnson, 52, Alan Knight, 61, Peter Kulski, 54, Francisco Zamora Lopez, 42, Gary Martinez, 44, Richard McKeon, 42, Robert K. Meyer, 56, Daniel Morris, 60, Tammy Peppers, 42, Paula Plurid, 48, Jesse Rodriguez, 47, Lorencia Rodriguez, 58, Belinda Rogers, 60, Juliet Rounce, 50, Charles Sabatino, 51, David Lee Sample, 57, Sean Scuderi, 36, Robert A. Sell, 65, Charles Squires, 50, George Stackhouse, 51, Michael Trotz, 54, Larry Turnell, 53, Michael Wheeler, 40, Justin White, 52, and Sandar Zombak, 64. It does not include a number of names which were brought up by others there, including the name I brought up, Chris Brozda. I don't know his age, but he died when he jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. He is an activist with a very militant website, man of very strong feelings and principles, who was often in conflict with other homeless activists because he didn't feel things were going fast enough, soon enough, and he was right. And he was angry about it. So you can read about the Sentinel's take on it in the on the website. Santa Cruz Sentinel has a website. It's the December 22nd paper. Another man died on Sunday. He was featured in today's Sentinel, Paul Sanford. He's an attorney. I've had him on my show before. He helped out homeless people on a number of occasions, putting in work that most attorneys wouldn't even think about doing. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Robert?
Yes.
What's up?
Well, you tell me. You're on Free Radio.
It's Madison.
Okay, Madison. Well,
I called Rodkin after I sat
Madison,
here because they
Madison,
showed the Puente Hills.
Madison. We're in the middle. We're in the middle of the names of the dead, of the homeless dead.
I know. I heard them all.
And I'm also talking about Paul Sanford, who died.
I know, and
allegedly.
I came up with another solution for money, which is what we're talking. You know, the main pain here.
What is it you want to talk about?
Well, they need to come up with other alternative ways to get more money to help the homeless.
Uh-huh.
So when I saw Puente Hills landfill and them going 75% of our trash comes this week, meaning rich people filling the landfill, and I put my trash out every 6 weeks, okay? They forget to get my can because it never goes out. That's how I don't put it out. But as I see all the rich people around me putting their can out every week, stuffed to the gills, I started thinking, well, those guys should pay more because I use less. And that money should be collected and donated to the homeless because they're using less like me.
And also, of course, people should not be
yeah.
arrested for.
So it's like a stand
people should
tag.
Not be.
We put a,
people should
know,
not
those
be.
Little
should not be.
Like
Madison.
On your trash.
Madison. People should not be arrested for recycling. Actually, homeless people often voluntarily are given recycling by people who have recycling.
Oh, I know, but I'm not
material. Let me finish. Let me finish.
Trash.
Let me finish.
I know all that.
Hang on, but the audience doesn't. The audience doesn't know that. It become a part of the public works program, the public works department's intent to criminalize homeless people who take recycling material and sell it in order to survive. Rather, they want that material to go to the city, even though people are, you know, essentially paying the city to take it away. The city doesn't, you know. Anyway,
know,
it upsets me that it happens.
It, but my feeling is,
yeah.
if you're, you know, a person with three cans. Every weekend, which some of the large homes
right.
in the hills are,
okay.
they should have an extra tax added to them with a Scantron, which we know how many cans exactly that you use, and that your tax goes into a homeless service.
Okay, budget. Well, thank you for that suggestion. I know that that also came
call
out.
Call Rodkin. Everybody call him up and tell him. That's what we want.
Okay, well,
call
that's...
At, we're at, I call, They shut off the phone this week at the city, so you have to call them up at the school. Leave a message.
Okay, why don't you get the number and call us back? Thanks.
Okay.
Again, getting back to Paul Sanford and the his death. I read about it actually yesterday in the Monterey Peninsula Herald because it happened. Well, it happened on Sunday, according to the Herald, but they didn't get out until Wednesday. And the Wednesday Herald, the story in the Monterey Peninsula Herald reads, police suspect Sanford, Paul Sanford committed suicide, lawyer falls to death at hotel. And what police describe as a probable suicide leap, a prominent Monterey Bay Area attorney fell at least 9 floors to his death at the Embassy Suites Hotel Monterey Bay in Seaside the morning before Christmas. Shortly before 9:30 a.m. Sunday, officers found the body of Aptos attorney Paul Sanford in the west end of the hotel lobby where he had landed on a large ventilation grate. Police Captain Steve Secaroni said horrified guests were eating breakfast in the atrium at the time, and a number of witnesses saw Sanford fall from somewhere between the 9th and 12th floors. "I'm at a loss for words," said Sanford's friend and business associate Monterey attorney Sean Mills. "Paul really had his fingers in a lot of different pies. He was from the East Coast, and I used to call him our West Coast Kennedy. In addition to running his criminal defense practice in Capitola, Sanford was active in community organizations and hosted several independent radio shows in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. For several years, he was program supervisor at the Volunteer Center in Santa Cruz and a teacher in the Monterey College of Law, where Mills said Sanford was an alumnus who mentored many students. He recently purchased his mother's home in Pebble Beach, and Mills said his friend planned to retire there one day. He was also active in the national arena. He appeared before the U.S. Supreme Court in 2004 beside Elk Grove resident Michael Newdow when he argued unsuccessfully that the words "under God" should be stricken from the Pledge of Allegiance. A passionate believer in a dynamic constitution, Sanford always carried a copy of the U.S. Constitution in his pocket, Mills said. He was a champion of the downtrodden. He represented homeless people in Santa Cruz and fought for free speech. He did a run across America, you name it, he's done it. This is a real shock and a loss to the community. Mills said Sanford decided in recent years to add journalism to his many occupations. Almost immediately, he caused a stir after he joined the White House press corps in 2005, making waves as the first reporter to ask then-White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan whether the leaking of CIA agent Valerie Plume's name might be considered an act of treason. There has been a lot of speculation concerning the meaning of the underlying statute and the grand jury investigation concerning Mr. Rove, Sanford asked. The question is, have the legal counsel to the White House or the White House staff reviewed the statute in sufficient specificity to determine whether a violation of that statute would in effect constitute treason? McClellan was apparently flustered by the question and replied that those are matters for those overseeing the investigation to decide. The White House incident sparked controversy after Beltway bloggers incorrectly described Sanford as a reporter for the Air America radio network. At the time, he was associated with the Watsonville radio station KOMY, an Air America affiliate, and Sanford told reporters he never claimed to work for Air America. Sanford eventually filed suit against KSCO station owner Michael Zwirling after Zwirling was reported as saying Sanford had not been authorized to represent the station as a reporter, a statement Sanford refuted. And Paul also talked to me about that in a lot of extensive private conversations, and he was looking forward to the trial where he would prove that he had been unfairly maligned by Michael Zwirling on that issue because he simply wanted to duck the entire controversy and disassociate himself from Sanford, probably because of his straightforward questions. This is my addition to the Monterey Peninsula story. Back to the Monterey Peninsula reporter, Julia Reynolds writing about this. Mills, the attorney, represented Sanford in that lawsuit against KSCO's Michael Zwirling, which was scheduled to begin in Santa Cruz County Superior Court in February. Mills said he did not know if the case will continue after Sanford's sudden death. Although the dispute with Zwirling caused Sanford a great deal of distress at the time, Mills said his friend was feeling fine about it and believed he would soon be vindicated in court. Sanford and Mills have also hosted the Paul and Sean show on Saturdays at Seaside radio station KRXA, where they covered last fall's election, interviewed former Salinas mayor and now Assemblywoman Anna Caballero, Pacific Grove Mayor Don Court, and others. Then there's more in detail on this. You can go to the Monterey Peninsula Herald website if you want to get more details. But the essence of it is, and I spoke with Sean Mills last night, that he had no idea why, actually it was mid-morning yesterday, how this, why Paul Sanford would have killed himself. Although it seemed, you know, other explanations are hard to come to either, because he had to climb over a balcony to get to apparently the area where you jumped off and landed 9 to 12 stories down. So it's not clear what happened. I'm actually going to give a call to attorney Kate Wells, who worked with Paul. Paul was also well known, at least by listeners of this station, of those who follow these issues closely, as an attorney in two important cases. One, the Camp Paradise case involving the necessity defense, where a number of people who lived in this homeless-run encampment on the banks of the San Lorenzo River in 2001 were tried for sleeping when the city had no legal place for them to go. And Sanford defended them in a trial that lasted for several days, one of the first trials I've ever seen that actually was fully recorded. And I have actually a part of that recording, which I may be able to dig out and play some of. The judge, Junk Justice Joseph, as I call him, Commissioner Irwin Junk Justice Joseph, found them guilty anyway, denying the necessity defense in what was, to me, a blatant political decision. He insisted that they could camp, they could sleep, but they couldn't camp. That's okay, for example, for women and children to sleep, but apparently not the benefit of a tent against the rain. Now, that was not appropriate, according to Justice, or I should say Commissioner Irwin Joseph. But Sanford spent many hours defending these folks. And then 2 years later, he went to court defending John Maurer, a homeless man who was harassed by police on Pacific Avenue for peaceful panhandling, and finally put a little sign in his cap that said, "Fuck the pigs." And he explained to people that he had some problems with the police because they were treating homeless people abusively. But the police, instead of taking this as perhaps a caution to back off, went after him further and gave him tickets for having a sign with offensive language while panhandling. And attorney Paul Sanford took that case to court. And once our city attorney, John Barisone, learned that there was an attorney behind a homeless man, he tried to run the other way. Paul Sanford wanted him to acknowledge there was a problem with the law. Barisone wouldn't do so. So Sanford spent more time and money taking Barisone to court in federal court and got a federal judge to rule that unless the city changed that law, he would rule that law unconstitutional. And the city did change that law slightly, not really sufficiently in terms of how other people's panhandling rights, right to peacefully ask for spare change, are constantly abused and denied by our police on Pacific Avenue. But there were some changes made, and indeed the discussion of that law came up recently in the case of Shane Maxfield, the homeless AIDS man who was harassed by Lulu Carpenter's owner, Manthri Srinath. And the way he did it was he had a citation drawn up against Shane for panhandling with obscene language under the new law, another bogus law citation which disappeared before it got to court, but was enough to intimidate Shane and to cause us to urge a boycott of Lulu Carpenter's. Paul was going to take that case, too, for Shane Maxfield. And I'm going to see if I can get a hold of Catnip Kate, as I call her, on the line. Perhaps we can actually check the situation out here and see what we got. We got a ring here. That's good. Maybe we can get her on the line. Have her talk about Paul a bit. She worked with him for many hours on these cases. And if it wasn't for his lead, she's very overtaxed. She might not have done anything herself. Maybe she's out tonight, and she was rather broken up to hear about Paul's death when I contacted her.
Hello, you've reached 479-1315.
No, looks like we've got a machine here.
No one's on the phone right now, but if you leave a message with your name, your phone number, I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
We'll leave
her
a message.
Thank you very much.
At the tone.
And I think maybe we'll leave our message another time. I can't stand that machine. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, and I'm Robert Norris, and this is called Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, in case you just tuned in. It's a show that concerns itself with local issues around civil rights for poor people. I'm talking about the death of attorney Paul Sanford. And it looks like we may not be getting that call from Sean Mills. He may be dealing with relatives. Well, who knows? He could be calling in even now. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hi, Madison.
The rock number at the school is 420-5023.
Thank you.
Okay.
And that indeed is council member and shadow mayor Mike Rotkin's number. And there are a number of things I would suggest you tell him. Madison suggested you talk to him about the disparity in recycling, or not recycling, in garbage rates. So if people are putting out more garbage, they should pay more. And people who don't put their cans out so frequently shouldn't have that problem and shouldn't pay as much, which is fair. I'd like you to talk about more direct homeless issues. Most homeless people can't even find a trash can and are ticketed for littering anyway. not most homeless people ticket for littering, but I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen recently. Rotkin is a key force on the city council who has been responsible for the retention of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ordinance, which criminalizes poor homeless people who have no legal place to go, as I've mentioned, after 11 o'clock at night. We can invite him to appear on the air, and perhaps we should do that. We'll just give him a call right now, and we can call him on air and leave a message and suggest perhaps he might want to come on the air and talk to us about some of these issues. He generally is not hesitant about coming on the air. At least in the past, he's been one of the most forthcoming council members. I will say that. Let's see if 420-5023 really is his number, because they change those numbers around. Let's see how we're doing here.
Hi, this is Mike Rotkin with the Community Field Program at UCSC and the council member in the city of Santa Cruz. Please leave a message. I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. Thanks.
You may start your message now.
Hey, Mike, this is Robert Norris calling you live on Free Radio. You're invited to come on an interview to talk about a number of issues. The issue I'm particularly interested in, of course, has to do with your recent comments on last night and the parade, but I'm also like to talk to you about some of our old traditional issues around sleeping and what homeless people can do during this season to avoid tickets. Give me a call, 423-4833. Thanks. And you can contact Mike Rotkin, too. The phone number is 420-5023, 420-5023. Give us a call at 427-3772 if you want to get to the studio, 427-3772. And if you want to get Mike Rotkin, 420-5023. If you want to get Mayor Emily Riley, who is the titular mayor, which is to say the person who has the title of mayor, you can call 420-5020, and you'll go through a system, and you'll eventually get her. I think her number is 420-5022, but I'm not quite sure. So that's the way to get the mayor. The council had gone on vacation for a month. They left at the after the first meeting in December. They won't be back till mid-January, and they left their police and their rangers running around giving out tickets, and these squads of, you know, goon squads roaming Pacific Avenue. We're going to be reviewing some of these tapes on Sunday. I actually went to, when I went to the meal at the homeless, at the Veterans Hall homeless meal. It was a meal for everybody, a community meal, but served a lot of homeless people. It happens every Thanksgiving and Christmas. When I went to the Christmas meal on the way, I got not only did I get a great update from D. Roger, et cetera, on the Veterans Hall controversy. Roger is getting much more articulate on those issues. Hats off to you, Roger, for raising the issue of how can the vets take back their vets hall. But also spoke to a number of people, including Cosmic Chris. We actually witnessed police harassment in action. Officer Klein and another officer, Klein was training a rookie to go around and, you know, harass people, poor people on the streets as a form of police training. It's really kind of disgusting. It's, I don't know, like breaking the windows of Jews or something. I mean, it has a similar kind of focused, it's okay to go after this crowd of people notion. And it just, really leaves a sour taste in my mouth. And I didn't like it when I saw it, and I'll play some of that on Sunday. I might even have more of it, because that's what happens. As I said, they're going to be an extra long show on Sunday. It'll begin at 7:30 in the morning. I'm taking up the time. Actually, I'm taking up time during the wake-up call to play more of the tape that Thomas Levitt, during his show, played last week, which has to do, again, with this last night event, this do-it-yourself last night, where people are actually trying to celebrate themselves and get the police and the bureaucrats and the merchants and the first alarm security off their backs. And who knows? I think they probably will if enough people come out. One of the things I noticed about the police stops that happened on Halloween that I observed was that police officers seemed reluctant and a little bit nervous about the presence of tape recorders and video cameras if there was a crowd nearby and people were interested in stopping and observing. Most people were timid, didn't want to stop and observe, or they were preoccupied, not interested, or they just didn't notice because it was other things were happening. But those who did caused the police, I think, to withdraw slightly from their aggressive, we can do whatever the fuck we want, keep moving and don't watch us stance. And admittedly, the Santa Cruz police are often better at this. They're better trained to be able to smile and nod and say hi and so forth as they give out these nasty citations that homeless people can't afford and that are primarily class law citations that have nothing to do with real public health and safety concerns, but simply are a way of expressing the power of the police department and the ability of the police department to essentially say, follow my orders or I'll give you a ticket. Or, in essence, also, I guess Cosmic Chris got a ticket for biking the wrong way on the biking on the sidewalk on a day when there was virtually no traffic whatsoever. And it looked like an attempt of, in this case, it wasn't particularly malicious. I mean, I don't think German cops giving out citations or acting against Jews were being necessarily malicious. They just thought they were, you know, doing their job. They were training the rookies. These are the new laws, all that sort of thing. So I'll be playing that on Sunday, starting at 7:30, going until 1 o'clock, a variety of things, events that happened, interviews that happened on December 25th, Christmas Day, how appropriate. And tune in if you'd like. And you can even tell some stories of your own as to what you've seen recently. Maybe you've seen some positive stuff. Maybe you've seen police officers helping homeless people. Maybe you've got another side of the story to tell. Well, feel free to do that. 427-3772 is the number to call in if you want to talk about these issues. Let's have a little bit of little music, and then we'll be back.
Together. Danny Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil. We know there's a link. They say Coke's war. We say Coke's pink. It's blood for oil. We know there's a link. They say Coke's war. We say Coke's pink. Coke's pink for freedom. Coke's pink for peace. Coke's pink for hunger.
Down really, Tara, they say
And that, of course, is Code Pink. The actual name of that song, just from a selection that was specially prepared for this show, thank you. I'm not sure who did this. Was it Thomas Levitt or Skidmark Bob? I'm not sure. It's Code Pink, and it's from a selection called Election Day USA. I'm going to read a little something now from Juan Cole, who has his own website and who writes regularly on his blog about the Iraqi situation. He's a scholar who speaks in a variety of languages and reads them, too, I understand. Actually, I'm guessing. I think he does, but he seems to know. He gives us translated versions of some stuff. He's occasional guest on various shows. He's a little conservative for my taste, but here's what he writes about the top 10 myths about Iraq 2006. Myth number one is that the United States can still win in Iraq. Of course, the truth of this statement, frequently still made by William Kristol and other neoconservatives, depends on what winning means. But if it means the establishment of a stable, pro-American, anti-Iranian government with an effective and even-handed army and police force in the near or even medium term, then the assertion is frankly ridiculous. The Iraqi government, quote-unquote, is barely functioning. The parliament was not able to meet in December because it could not attain a quorum. Many key Iraqi politicians live most of the time in London, and much of the parliament is frequently abroad. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki does not control large swaths of the country and could give few orders that had any chance of being obeyed. The U.S. military cannot shore up this government even with an extra division because the government is divided against itself. Most of the major parties trying to craft legislation are also linked to militias on the streets who are killing one another. It is over with. Iraq is in for years of heavy political violence of a sort that no foreign military force can hope to stop. The United States cannot win in the sense defined above. It cannot. And the blindly arrogant assumption that it can win is calculated to get more tens of thousands of Iraqis killed and more thousands of American soldiers and Marines badly wounded or killed. I don't know if I'd agree it's calculated to do that, but it'll have that effect. That's my thought. Also, I would add that I've also read elsewhere that the Iraqi parliament has succeeded in passing virtually no legislation whatsoever in the last year, so it isn't really a parliament either in any meaningful sense. Moreover, since Iraq is coming apart at the seams under the impact of our presence there, there is a real danger that we will radically destabilize it and the whole oil-producing Gulf if we try to stay longer. Myth number two, U.S. military sweeps of neighborhoods can drive the guerrillas out. The U.S. put an extra 15,000 men into Baghdad this past summer, aiming to crush the guerrillas and stop the violence in the capital, and the number of attacks actually increased. This result comes about in part because the guerrillas are not outsiders who come in and then are forced out. The Sunni Arabs of Ghazaliya and Dora districts in the capital are the insurgents. The U.S. military cannot defeat the Sunni Arab guerrilla movement or insurgency with less than 500,000 troops, based on what we have seen in the Balkans and other such conflict situations. The U.S. destroyed Fallujah, and even it and other cities of al-Anbar province are not now safe. The U.S. military leaders on the ground have spoken of the desirability of just withdrawing from al-Anbar to Baghdad and giving up on it. In 2003, 14% of Sunni Arabs thought it legitimate to attack U.S. personnel and facilities. In August 2006, over 70% did. How long before it is 100%? Winning guerrilla wars requires two victories, a military victory over the guerrillas and a winning of the hearts and minds of the general public, thus denying the guerrillas support. The U.S. is not and is unlikely to be able to repress the guerrillas, and it is losing hearts and minds at an increasing and alarming rate. They hate us, folks. They don't want us there. Three, myth number three by Juan Cole. The United States is best off throwing all its support behind the Iraqi Shiites. This is the position adopted fairly consistently by Mark Rule Gerecht. Gerecht is an informed and acute observer whose views I respect even more when I disagree with him, but Washington policymakers should read Daniel Goleman's work on social intelligence. Goleman points out that a good manager of a team in a corporation sets up a win-win framework for every member of the team. If you set it up on a win-lose basis so that some are actively punished and others triumph, you are asking for trouble. Conflict is natural. How you manage conflict is what matters. If you listen to employees employees' grievances and try to figure out how they can be resolved in such a way that everyone benefits, then you're a good manager. Gerecht, it seems to me, sets up a win-lose model in Iraq. The Shiites and Kurds win it all, and the Sunni Arabs get screwed over. Practically speaking, the Bush policy has been Gerechtian, which in my view has caused all the problems. We shouldn't have thought of our goal as installing the Shiites in power. Of course, Bush hoped that those so installed would be secular, and that is what Wolfowitz and Chalabi had promised him. Gerecht came up with this, the ex post facto justification that even the religious Shiites are moving toward democracy via Sistani. But democracy cannot be about one sectarian identity prevailing over another and marginalizing others. The Sunni Arabs have demonstrated conclusively that they can act effectively as spoilers in the new Iraq. If they aren't happy, no one is going to be. The U.S. must negotiate with the guerrilla leaders and find a win-win framework for them to come in from the cold and work alongside the Kurds and the religious Shiites. About this, U.S. Ambassador in Baghdad, Zalmel Khalizadad, has been absolutely right. Myth number four, Iraq is not in a civil war, as Jurassic conservative Fox commentator Bill O'Reilly insists. There is a well-established social science definition of civil war put forward by Professor J. David Singer and his colleagues. Quote, sustained military combat, primarily internal, resulting in at least 1,000 battle deaths per year, pitting central government forces against an insurgent force capable of effective resistance, determined by the latter's ability to inflict upon the government forces at least 5% of the fatalities that the insurgents sustain. Errol A. Henderson and J. David Singer, Civil War in the Postcolonial World. See my article on this in Salon.com. By Singer's definition, Iraq has been in civil war since the Iraqi government was reestablished in the summer of 2004. When I have been around political scientists, as at the ISA conference, I have found that scholars in that field tend to accept Singer's definition. Myth number five. The second Lancet study showing 600,000 excess deaths from political and criminal violence since the U.S. invasion is somehow flawed. Les Roberts replies here to many of the objections that were raised. See also the transcript of the Kucinich-Paul congressional hearings on the subject. Many critics refer to the numbers of dead reported in the press as counterarguments, that is to say, much smaller numbers than the 600,000 in the British Lancet Journal study, that are supposedly died as a consequence of the American invasion, civilians dying from insurgency, U.S. killing, criminal killing, and so forth, since the U.S. occupation began in April 2006. But passive reporting, such as news articles, never captures more than a fraction of the casualties in any war. I see deaths reported in the Arabic press all the time that never show up in the English language wire services, and a lot of towns in Iraq don't have local newspapers, and many local deaths are not reported in the national newspapers. Myth number six, most deaths in Iraq are from bombings. The Lancet study found that the majority of violent deaths are from being shot. Seven, Baghdad and environs are especially violent, but the death rate is lower in the rest of the country. This is another myth, according to Juan Cole. The Lancet study found that levels of violence in the rest of the country are similar to that in Baghdad. Remember that the authors included criminal activities such as gang and smuggler turf wars in their statistics. The Shiite South has spared much Sunni Shiite fighting, but criminal gangs, tribal feuds, and militias fight one another over oil and antiquities smuggling, and a lot of people are getting shot down there, too. Myth number eight, Iraq is the central front in the war on terror. From the beginning of history until 2003, there had never been a suicide bombing in Iraq. There was no al-Qaeda in Ba'ath-controlled Iraq. When Ba'ath intelligence heard that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi might have entered Iraq, they grew alarmed at such an al-Qaeda presence and put out an APB on him. Zarqawi's so-called al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia was never central in Iraq and was never responsible for more than a fraction of the violent attacks. This assertion is supported by the outcome of a U.S.-Jordanian operation that killed Zarqawi this year. His death had no impact whatsoever on the level of violence. There are probably only about 1,000 foreign fighters even in Iraq, and most of them are first-time volunteers, not old-time terrorists. The 50 major guerrilla cells in Sunni Arab Iraq are mostly made up of Iraqis and are mainly, 1, Ba'athist or Neo-Ba'athist, 2, Sunni Revivalist or Salafi, 3, tribally based, or 4, based in city quarters. Al-Qaeda is mainly a boogeyman invoked in Iraq on all sides, but possessing little real power or presence there. This is not to deny that radical Sunni Arab volunteers come to Iraq to blow things, and often themselves, up. They just are not more than an auxiliary to the big movements, which are Iraqi. Myth number 9. The Sunni Arab guerrillas in places like Ramadi will follow the U.S. home to the American mainland and commit terrorism if we leave Iraq. This assertion is just a variation on the invalid domino theory. People in Ramadi only have one beef with the United States. Its troops are going through their wives' underwear in the course of house searches every day. They don't want the U.S. troops in their town or their homes, dictating to them that they must live under a government of Shiite clerics and Kurdish warlords, as they think of them. If the U.S. withdrew and let the Iraqis work out a way to live with one another, people in Ramadi will be happy. They are not going to start taking flight lessons and trying to get visas to the U.S. This argument about following us, if it were true, would have prevented us from ever withdrawing from any place once we entered a war there. We'd be forever stuck in the Philippines for fear that Filipino terrorists would follow us back home, or Korea. We moved 15,000 U.S. troops out of South Korea not so long ago. Was that unwise? Are the thereby liberated Koreans now gunning for us? Or how about the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Grenada, France? The argument is a crock. Myth number 10. Setting a timetable for withdrawal from Iraq is a bad idea. Bush and others in his administration have argued that setting such a timetable would give a significant military advantage to the guerrillas fighting U.S. forces and opposed to the new government. That assertion makes sense only if there were a prospect that the U.S. could militarily crush the Sunni Arabs. There is no such prospect. The guerrilla war is hotter now than at any time since the U.S. invasion. It is more widely supported by more Sunni Arabs than ever before. It is producing more violent attacks than ever before. Since we cannot defeat them short of genocide, we have to negotiate with them. And their first and most urgent demand is that the U.S. set a timetable for withdrawal before they will consider coming into the new political system. That is, we should set a timetable in order to turn the Sunni guerrillas from combatants into a political negotiating partner. Even Sunni politicians cooperating with the U.S. make this demand. They are disappointed with the lack of movement on the issue. How long do they remain willing to cooperate? In addition, 131 Iraqi members of parliament signed a demand that the U.S. set a timetable for withdrawal. 138 would be a simple majority. It is a major demand of the Sadr movement. In fact, the 32 Sadrist MPs withdrew from the ruling United Iraqi Alliance coalition temporarily over this issue. In my view, Shiite leaders such as Abdul Aziz al-Hakim are repeatedly declining to negotiate in good faith with the Sunni Arabs or to take their views seriously. Al-Hakim knows that if the Sunnis give him any trouble, he can sic the Marines on them. The U.S. presence is making it harder for Iraqi to compromise with Iraqi, which is counterproductive. And these are the 10 myths that Juan Cole dispels or criticizes or debunks. And again, they are: the one, that Iraq can still win, the U.S. can still win in Iraq; 2, that U.S. military sweeps of neighborhoods can drive the guerrillas out; 3, that the U.S. is best throwing its support behind the Iraqi Shiites; 4, that Iraq is not in a civil war; 5, that the second Lancet study showing this huge number of 600,000 deaths from political and criminal violence since the U.S. invasion in Iraq is somehow flawed; 6, that most deaths in Iraq are from bombing; 7, that Baghdad and environs are especially violent, but the death rate is lower elsewhere in the country; 8, that Iraq is the central front on the war on terror; 9, that the Sunni Arab guerrillas in places like Ramadi will follow the U.S. home to the American mainland and commit terrorism if we leave Iraq; and finally, that setting a timetable for withdrawal is a bad idea. If you want to read the commentary that other people had about Juan Cole's notions, you can go to his website. Just Google for Juan Cole. That's Juan, J-U-A-N, Cole, C-O-L-E. The name of his website is Informed Comment. So, you're tuned to Free Radio. 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is the kind of the last of Bathrop Spears' broadsides. We're going to play a little more from the demonstration, which may be resuming soon in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, because that's, as I said, the workplace of Mayor Ryan, Vice Mayor Ryan Coonerty, who is the only attorney on the city council, and he has repeatedly made the interesting statement that our law, even though the L.A. sleeping ban has been declared unconstitutional and ours is functionally the same, is constitutional. And we've asked him in various, Huff has asked him, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has asked the vice mayor to clarify his statement, explain what the difference is, and so far he has not been able to do so. In fact, when we spoke to him outside the bookshop Santa Cruz a week ago, he said he was talking about camping and not sleeping. And we tried to explain to him, well, camping under our law in Santa Cruz is defined as sleeping if it's after 11 o'clock at night. And he said he'd have to go back to the law books to look that one over. At least he seemed to take that impression with him. He didn't make any particular comment, actually. He just sort of said he was very busy and had to keep going on. We're hoping that we can, get people to, well, talk to the vice mayor about this issue, because every homeless person that's ticketed is a way of intimidating and degrading that person, also makes that person and others who hear about it less safe, because, as has been said before, they're less likely to sleep together in places where they can be safe. Let's hear some more from this protest. And if you're interested in these protests and you want to be a part of them, give a call to the Huff line at 423-4833. We're going to be showing up with some more food and some music, and, well, we'll be doing our thing. And we hope you join us. 423-4833. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi there. What is the exact number? Are you 96.7?
No, we're 101.1 FM.
101.1.
Oh, yeah, and we're okay. freakradio.org.
Yeah, and there's no actual way to get an update of what times your music comes up and what days.
You know, you should go online at www.freakradio.org, and you'll get you'll be able to download a schedule of Free Radio from there, I think.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Madam?
Jesse Kittle.
And you know about the sleeping ban already?
I absolutely do.
And when did you learn about that?
I started working at the drop-in center on Front Street last May, so about around then.
Well, don't you feel that our city needs to get rid of the riffraff somehow?
No.
Well, obviously a difficult person. You can sign the petition over here if you'd like.
I would love to. Thanks.
Thank you. Any comments on this, sir? On what? The sleeping ban issue in Santa Cruz.
The sleeping ban is a ridiculous thing. I remember when it started years ago, it's such a horrible thing to do to people. Unjust. What do you expect people to do if they don't have a place to stay? And if Santa Cruz is not capable of providing shelter for more than 160 people? It's ridiculous. It's craziness. See, it's one of the things that makes it such a... Santa Cruz has this facade of being this liberal, loving place, and yet we do such horrible things to some of our citizens. It's a terrible thing.
Your name is?
Patrick Stonehouse.
Thanks, Patrick.
Absolutely.
Well, let's take another brief musical break here. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. We used to be 96.3, but that was a long time ago. So, yeah, stay at 101.1, and you'll be right on the right target.
Got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could. Struck us all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout, we'll all feel better in the morning. Passionate conservative, my ass, in executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he gonna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think on getting his knife? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad. Now we're all in danger.
What's your name, Adam? Come on.
Who am I talking to?
Pam.
Pam, you just signed this petition?
Yes.
Probably the 15th petition on the sleeping ban.
Yeah, I've signed several before.
And you were with Camp Paradise for a long time?
Yeah, a long time.
Are you sleeping outside still?
No, fortunately, we have a place.
That's good. But still, you have a belief that the sleeping ban is not a good law?
No, it's not a good law.
And who is this questionable person with you? And what do you think about all this?
It's good. It's very good.
The sleeping ban is good, or what we're doing is good?
What you guys are doing is good.
Thank you. And we're thinking of maybe getting together a tent city like certain older times and doing another thing over the winter, because there's a law in Los Angeles that was overturned by the court, so we think we can do the same here.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
We expect you two to come down with your tents and freeze your asses off again.
Okay.
Thanks. A man just signed a petition. Your name, sir?
I'm Benjamin Schlitz.
And Benjamin, you actually sleep in your vehicle?
More often than not. Sometimes I couch surf if it's wet.
Yeah. And have you been hassled by police?
Actually, no. I've managed to avoid it.
But how long have you been?
I know folks who have been. So, yeah.
How long have you been in a vehicle?
Since June. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. Does that mean because you're very careful about where you sleep, or is it because you're
Certain areas, and sometimes people let me use driveways instead. And so, yeah, people don't pay as much attention if you're in a driveway, so that's nice.
Thank you. We're talking with...
My name is Douglas.
And Douglas, you have some info for us. Go ahead.
Yes. There was an act passed through Congress called the Cecil White Act. In 1986, a woman named Cecil White froze to death in St. James Park in San Jose because there was no homeless shelter. Since then, they have built the Cecil White Center, but there is also money out there that the city and the county and the state can petition for. It's billions of dollars to build the necessary amount of shelters for the necessary amount of homeless people that there are. And part of the legislation was that it would make it a crime for a city, a county, or a state to have this situation continue within their boundaries.
I appreciate you letting me know about that. I know about the Stuart McKinney Act. I hadn't heard about the Cecil White Act.
She was 96 years old, and she froze to death in St. James Park.
And you know about this because?
Because I lived at the Cecil White Center.
All right. And your name again?
My name is Douglas.
Thank you, Douglas. Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Sign up a petition.
I'm
going. Doesn't matter. You can be, you don't have to be.
Your name cannot be, your name on something like that cannot be used to incriminate you.
Yeah.
It's your right as an American.
A man who's a felon signing the petition, and that's right on. Your name, sir?
My name is Johnny Circa. Just been a traveler for most of my life. I backpack from Maine to Florida. Always been a working man. I hold up jobs and usually try to keep myself indoors. I'm a diabetic, but I have a lot of friends, and I know what it's like to be on the street and have warmth. In Ohio, like, there's a lot of plans where within like an area the size of Santa Cruz town, you can find food and soup kitchens. You can eat like three meals a day at 10 different locations throughout like an area the size of Santa Cruz. And you know, there's snow out there, and there's like at least an average of 2,000 people on the streets of Ohio. You know, on any given day, and I guess there's like 5,000 people on the streets of Santa Cruz on any given day. And there's definitely a lot more funds out here, and it's supposed to be a liberal town. And you know, you'd think that people out here would be a little more helpful, and like they are helpful, but you know, they only are to an extent. Like, I stayed at the Armory last night for the second time, and it's supposed to be one of the only shelters for people out here, and they only house about 100 of those 5,000 people that are given to me on any night on the street. these 100 people, we went there, and there was no running water. There was no bathrooms, you know. And I understand that they're trying to help us out, but the fact is, you know, there's not enough help out there. People aren't realizing, you know. It's a struggling town with, like, the economy, even if you're a working person. And, you know, there's people out here that are homeless stealing from each other. You know, it's really sad. If this is really a liberal place, people should really try to make a better effort to make what this, like, town was made famous for, and, like, what most West Coast towns were made famous for back in the 60s, and being, you know, like, liberal and being hippie and trying to help your brother and having freedom. So make freedom free.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Johnny Circa.
Thank you, Johnny. Hey, Ryan.
Robert.
He's the vice mayor. He supports the sleeping bin. And that is the law that criminalizes poor people. So when you spend money in the bookshop Santa Cruz, you are supporting the sleeping bin.
I do that because I love bookshops here, too. But I also love homeless people and think they should have a right to sleep anywhere they want. As I got a right to sleep on the beach or anywhere I want to sleep.
Or somewhere, anywhere, is what I
love. I love that, because I love...
This is a petition to end the sleeping ban and ask the city attorney to support the law. Thank you very much.
You're inside, but you
just signed this petition to end the sleeping ban.
Yeah, it surprises me that Bookshop Santa Cruz would be pro any kind of a law like that. It seems kind of ridiculous to me. It's Santa Cruz.
Actually, Neil Coonerty led the drive to make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, make it illegal to have a table within 6 feet of a building. And there was a whole series of laws which he felt was necessary for business, you see.
He felt it was necessary, I imagine, because he's never been in that position before.
I suspect you're right.
Never been paid.
Thank you. So it's about 10 after 2 on Sunday, December 23rd, down here at Pacific and Cathcart. And here's a man with a sign, homeless, needs some help. Anything helps so I can have a little Christmas cheer. I would like a watch, a good meal, and real smokes, no drugs or booze. How's it going with the search for assistance?
Not good.
And how long have you been here on this bench?
About 3 hours.
And what kind of goodies have come your way?
Buck and a quarter.
Well, let's make that a buck 50, shall we? You know, that small change there.
Thank you.
Sure. So what kind of reactions have you got? Anybody commenting or any conversation?
Not really.
What about those mean-looking guys in police uniforms with the words probation written on the back? Any discussion with them?
No negative.
Have they been... Have you seen them here much, or did they just pass by once?
Twice.
And did you see them... Any idea what they're up to?
No.
Anything else you've seen that you might want to pass on to our free radio audience about downtown doings?
Oh, I've been down here twice today, and they've been IDing me twice, both times. Earlier, a cop come by, and they ID'd me.
What did he say to you? Did he say you were... What basis did he have for asking for your ID?
They didn't give me no reason.
He said, let's see your ID?
Yep.
Or did they say, could I see your ID?
No, they demanded my ID.
Now, are you on probation or parole?
Nope.
So you have no need to show your ID, but you're just being a gentle, friendly, Christmas-spirited, check, here, take all my rights, please, sort of thing?
Correct.
Have you been in town long?
About 5 months.
How have you been treated on the last 5 months?
I usually hang around the beach, and I've been harassed quite often.
And what form does that harassment usually take?
Well, I camp out down there around the Lighthouse Tower, and I've had my stuff stolen by Ranger Wallace twice.
John Wallace, the Parks and Rec Ranger, who was given more tickets than all four police officers combined in the city of Santa Cruz in the last 7 months?
Correct.
Now, by camping tickets is what I'm speaking of, camping, sleeping, and the blanket tickets. Can you describe any of your encounters with Ranger Wallace?
He's always harassing me and telling me I have to move on whenever it's a public beach, a public property, sitting on the wooden benches on the public property.
And why does he say you have to move on? Because he wants to give you exercise? What's his deal?
Because I am a vagrant.
Well, you know, it's not illegal to be a vagrant in Santa Cruz.
Well, he says I can sit in jail for 5 or 6 days and then the judge can dismiss my charges.
What charges he threatened to put you in jail for?
Vagrancy, loitering.
He's actually, has he used those words or has he used other words?
He's used those words.
And were you intoxicated at the time?
No.
Were you exposing your genitalia?
No.
Had you just beaten up any citizen?
No.
Were you caught with $1,000 in stolen money, perhaps?
No.
Well, I don't know. You're part of an Al-Qaeda terrorist cell. You're planning to do some terrorist bombing?
I am Bin Laden myself, him in the cell, yes.
You are Bin Laden?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I've been wanting to talk to you. I think there are numerous others. I think it's a $5 million reward on your head, sir.
No, it's actually 18.
Really? Yeah. Well, this could be my lucky day. When was the last time you actually were, you say police today have talked to you twice?
Yes.
Well, the fact of the matter is you have a right, and I'm not an attorney, but I do kind of try to keep current. You have a right to sit on this bench in Cathcart Pacific. You have a right to hold a sign. But the police officers, if they know the law,
looks like the battery is failing on this tape recorder. Either that or the tape is very sick. Could have the flu. Anyway, it's the end of the show. You've been listening to Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. This final word about Paul Sanford, the free speech lawyer who died in the apparent suicide attempt, from Becky Johnson. Paul Sanford was a fine attorney, a great humanitarian, and a champion of the poor and homeless. He was a cut above most lawyers in his understanding and his devotion to justice, and often consulted with Huff members on tactical strategies to end the criminalization of homelessness. This is a tragic loss for the Santa Cruz community and for poor and homeless people especially. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, it's going to be From the Cream to the Dregs with... Well, this isn't Uncle Dennis. It's some interloper who seems to be taking over Uncle Dennis's show. What exactly is your name, sir?
I am Uncle Dennis. I've just gone to the Fountain of Youth and seen the light, so now I'm a lot younger now.
Yeah, well, I think those who regularly listen to Free Radio can recognize the lying treachery of that statement. In any case, come on back on Sunday. I'll be back at 7:30 in the morning, taking over Thomas Levitt's The Wake Up Call, and then probably taking over the entire studio for the rest of the year. Actually, it's going to be the last day of the year when I come back on January 31st, so I'll take about half a day. And then I'll be down at the DIY last night trying to see if I can find Deputy Chief Vogel and getting him, inveigle him into being the Grand Marshal of the parade. Give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And this show is archived or will be soon on the Huff website at www.huffsantacruz.org. Tune in again at 7:30 on Sunday. I'll be back.
All right, folks. Tune to the Cream to the Dregs here. Uncle Dennis is out of town for the holidays, so I'm going to be spinning some classic rock for you. We're going to start off with some live Black Sabbath. Very rare, from 1975 in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Black Sabbath live, Freak Radio.
off our new album, so you may not know it, you probably don't. Listen to it, you might like it, okay? It's called Hole in the Sky.